The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11. Now on Mitchell's Front Page, On the Road with Toby Hagan.
Good morning, Toby. How are you?
Very well, Mitchell. Good morning.
First of all, some pricing changes to the Toyota Yaris. That's pretty much always been Toyota's most affordable car. It's a very small car, but the price is going up considerably, is it?
Big time, yeah. Like, this is, as you say, Toyota's cheapest car. It's been the car that they've used to lure particularly younger buyers into the Toyota fray and ideally keep them with the Toyota family throughout their motoring life. But the new one is a significant step up. So it's actually jumped in price by about 44%, which is enormous at that end of the market. I mean, this is a section of the market where $1,000 or $2,000 can make a big difference to demand. And this car's suddenly jumped to the most affordable one being around about $25,000. And then you can add things like an automatic transmission onto that as well. So it's certainly a big step up on where the Yaris has been. Toyota admits that it's obviously gone up in price a fair bit. They defend it by saying that the technology in the car obviously costs money to implement. Now, some of the technology they've got in there, it's the first affordable car to come with a centre airbag. So between the front seat occupants, there's an airbag that can pop up and stop those occupants from hitting their heads. It's also got some pretty advanced crash avoidance technology, so the most advanced in that that city car class. So you add all that up and all of a sudden you end up with an expensive car. But as I said, there's going to be a lot of people who simply cannot afford $25,000 for an entry-level car. So Toyota's saying, well, if that's the case, we've got a whole bunch of second-hand cars here and you can have a look at those.
So the $25,000 doesn't even get you automatic transmission.
No, that's right. The base cars are manual, so you do have to add a little bit more for the auto transmission. They're also offering a hybrid in it for the first time, so it's going to be the only car in that segment with a hybrid option. And it also gets, across the range, a new three-cylinder engine. So whereas the previous car had a four-cylinder engine, the new one gets a three-cylinder but with a larger capacity. So the engine is a big step up on where they've been previously. And as I said, the hybrid system's an interesting one in terms of offering a fair bit of fuel saving there. It'll be one of the most fuel-efficient cars on the market. 3.3-odd litres per 100 kilometres is the official claim. And indeed, around town, it'll actually use less than that. So it's a very fuel-efficient car.
The concern about vehicle safety is a big one with young people when they're buying that first car. And the risk is, of course, if they're pushed into the used car market, that the vehicles they get won't have the features like the centre airbag. And, of course, young people are most likely to have a crash.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's the thing is, I guess a lot of young people think they're invincible. And to them, they would prefer, or quite a few of them would prefer, not to pay for that sort of technology. Obviously, their parents would love that they get that sort of thing. But you're absolutely right. Sending them to the used car market, they're going to miss out on the technology that they're stepping up to. I guess this won't be an issue in 5 or 10 years once all these sorts of vehicles start filtering through to the used car market. But at the moment, it absolutely is an issue. And as I said, we've seen lots of P-platers and so on trying to save money. They'd rather get the flashy look or something else rather than the airbags that they don't necessarily think they're ever going to need.
And you mentioned hybrid. Just as a side note, the Geelong City Council has posted the mayoral car is now a hybrid vehicle for the first time ever. Do you think that hybrid cars result in a saving overall once you factor in the increased purchase price and the fuel costs, and of course petrol is very cheap at the moment, etc., or is it more about the environmental credentials?
All depends on the cost of the hybrid system up front. So these days, if you'd asked me that question 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, almost certainly the payback, you could not have got the payback in the average age of the car. These days, it's very easy to. So, for example, the Toyota Corolla, it's only $1,500 more for the hybrid system. In this Toyota Yaris, it's $2,000 more. So you can typically pay that off within 2, 3, 4 years. So once you're getting to that sort of level and a fairly affordable hybrid system, a lot of people then say, well, hang on, that could work for me because they can see within the ownership, within their ownership of the vehicle, they can see that it's going to pay itself off. So absolutely, we're getting to that point where hybrid is starting to make a lot of sense. Less so for electric. Electric still has the full electric cars still have a big price premium on them. And you certainly, you're not, as a general rule, you won't get the payback on them throughout the life of the car. So it's you're sort of adopting it for other reasons, whether it's the performance or the refinement or anything like that. But at the moment, the payback on an EV, pure EV, is certainly a fair bit longer.
Now, you've got an update for us from General Motors.
Yeah, General Motors just last week announced GMSV, or General Motors Specialty Vehicles. Now, this will be run by the same outfit, Walkinshaw, the Walkinshaw Group, who used to run HSV, Holden Special Vehicles. So GM Special Vehicles allows them to sell a whole bunch of typically low-volume vehicles, most of them out of the United States. So, for example, this is the company that's been converting the Chevy Silverado pickup trucks from left-hand drive to right-hand drive. So they will continue to do that, obviously now under the GMSV banner. They also have confirmed that the Chevrolet Corvette will be coming to Australia probably late next year or early 2022, something like that. So it's, I guess, some genuine excitement, and a lot of people are looking forward to that vehicle and seeing how it goes muscling in on the turf that has typically been commanded by something like Porsche.
Now, talking about Genesis, and I have to say, you don't see that many Genesis cars out and about. Maybe it's just a Geelong thing, but they've announced an SUV, have they?
They have, yeah. Look, you're right about not seeing many of them. I think in 2 years they've sold about 180, so it's certainly one of the most exclusive cars on the road. If you want exclusivity, you don't want your neighbours to have the same car, then, then a Genesis is a pretty good bet. But, look, this is a brand that's owned by Hyundai. They've got pretty big aspirations of trying to muscle in on that turf that's dominated by BMW, Mercedes-Benz and Audi. They're finding it pretty tough at the moment. They knew it was going to be tough, but I think they're hoping this new one, their first SUV called the GV80, will make some inroads. It's a large SUV, up to three rows of seats. You get a choice of, smaller 2.5-litre engines powering only the rear wheels, or you can have all-wheel drive models with more power. Pretty classy interior on it. They've certainly stepped it up in terms of the interior look and the presentation, and also thrown a lot of equipment at it. So not exactly cheap. I mean, by the time you get it registered and on the road, it'll be close to $100,000, and then upwards of that if you want the all-wheel drive and the bigger engines. But a big step up for Genesis. And I think, as I said, it's the sort of car that that potentially will appeal to families. They've currently only had two sedans on the market, and obviously families these days very much gravitate towards the SUVs.
Now, tell us about car charging at home, the electric cars. A lot of talk about, you know, that you'll be able to power your home from your electric car battery, and I think even feed power back into the grid.
Absolutely. So there's been a few developments over the last week or so. Jet Charge, which is one of the big installation companies, they say that their demand for home wall box chargers has jumped about 500% over the past 12 months, to the point where they're now installing around 20 of these chargers per day, which is enormous when you think about it. I mean, they certainly don't sell that many rechargeable cars per day. They're actually saying some of that demand is coming from owners who may want those charging points at two or three locations. So they might have one at the holiday house, for example, one at the office and one at home. And in particular, they've noticed that from the Porsche Taycan, which is the first electric Porsche. That's coming up in the next few months. And obviously a lot of those owners, fairly wealthy, often do have the holiday house. And as I said, they've decided to install more than one charging box. But at the same time, Jet Charge, through its charging network called Charge Fox, they say they want to allow people to potentially pay for their parking with electricity. So basically what you can do with this vehicle-to-grid technology, which is just in its infancy at the moment but expected to step up over the next few years, is roll up to a parking station, plug in, feed your electricity from your electric car back into the grid, sell it to them at a premium. During obviously peak times, if you're in a public car park, for example, during the middle of the day, then when you get home, you can charge it at off-peak rates and potentially make a profit on your electricity. So there's a few interesting scenarios there. One is the potential to make a tiny bit of money. It wouldn't be massive. You're not going to be a millionaire out of it, but you can make a little bit of money out of your car. But also the potential to smooth the grid, the demand on the grid over the 24-hour period. So be able to, send or get some demand going in the middle of the night when not many people are using electricity, and feed it back in when the peak time's there.
Yeah, I'm guessing it it's not cheap to get one of these things installed, and then once you put the one in the office in the holiday house, it gets even more expensive. So I'm guessing you're just offsetting the purchase price.
A little bit. I mean, keep in mind it's a one-off cost, obviously, for these vehicles. So if you buy the charging point, they typically cost somewhere around $1,500 to $2,000.
Oh, that's not too bad.
One of those wall box chargers. No, not out of control. And as I said, it's theoretically that technology should last for many, many years, if not decades. You should be able to keep using that charging point for a long time yet. So hopefully it'll pay itself off before too long.
And last of all, you've been driving the new Volvo. What's that like?
Yeah, look, an XC40 Recharge, and I guess as the name suggests, you can recharge it with electricity. It's one of these plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, so gets sort of 35 to 40 kilometres of pure electric range, albeit with dulled-down performance a bit just from the electric motor. It's only a 60-kilowatt electric motor. But then you've got a 1.5-litre, 3-cylinder turbocharged engine, which gives you a fair bit of pep. It's actually a really zingy little engine that suits the character of the car. It's got a fair bit of sportiness, 0 to 100 in about 7.3 seconds. And look, that XC40 is a genuinely impressive little, classified as a small SUV, but really it's got some decent size on its to offer there. So you've got decent space in the back, certainly can live with a family of four. And they've even managed to fit something like a spare tyre in the rear. So whereas a lot of these plug-in hybrids tend to start shedding equipment so they can fit the batteries in, they've managed to fit a spare tyre in, albeit a very skinny space saver one. But some clever packaging going on there in terms of how they've stuffed all the gear in. And as I said, it's a nice driving car. The negative is it's not cheap, so you're looking at sort of high $60,000 mark. So it's about an $8,000 premium for the hybrid system, the plug-in hybrid system. And on top of that, you go from having in the non-hybrid, you get an all-wheel drive or a four-wheel drive car. In the plug-in hybrid, it's front-wheel drive only. So even things like going to the snow, obviously, you'll... you don't necessarily have that extra traction and grip that that would be handy with the all-wheel drive system. So there's the premium there, but a nice car to drive.
Well, thanks for being on the program. Talk to you again in 2 weeks' time.
Sounds great. Thanks, Mitchell.
Thank you. Toby Hagen there, the editor of evcentral.com.au.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.